All right, Monday night on the Fan pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, the Fan. And for the next 2 weeks, I got a different Jay in the house, Jesse Rubinoff, joining me as Justin takes some much-deserved time off. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
You had some time off.
I did have some time off. Très bien. It's funny. Like, obviously, we all take French in school. And as soon as I landed in Paris, I forgot literally everything I had
learned. I know, like, la bibliothèque.
I think it's the pressure.
That's about it.
I honestly think it's the pressure of, like, they obviously ask you something or talk to you and, like, a simple bonjour, and you're like, and then the
you're
onus
like,
is
hi.
On, right. The onus is on you to continue the conversation.
Yeah.
And I just buckled every single time. So I know bonjour, mm-hmm. Merci, and bonsoir, and that's pretty much where I capped
it. The Ontario education system is not applauding you at this moment.
It's been a while.
It's true. Okay, we got a big one-hour show on tap for everyone today. We got lots to go through. So usually on a Monday in mid-August, we're scrounging for topics, but we've got Chris Bassett on the Chris Rose podcast, which, of course, people have been circulating around today. And then since we've already spoken about the Chris Bassett, Chris Rose podcast, we've got Chris Rose on the show at 6:30. And in that time frame of booking Chris Rose till now, Chris Bassett has already spoken to Arden Zwelling, kind of backtracking some of his comments. So we'll go through that. Yeah, very much backtracking. Olympic gold and backtracking.
Very good.
That was a good laugh.
Yeah.
I like working with you, Jesse? Because you laugh at everything.
No, that was a quality.
I listen when you're on our daytime shows and our nighttime shows, and you give a good laugh.
Are you saying that when I'm on with Mike Gentile, I laugh all the time?
Yeah, you do laugh a lot. And you know what? Sometimes they're very much deserved. okay, so Chris Bassett Chris Rose on Chris Bassett a little later in the show. Of course, some NFL with him today. Also, we were fired up. I've been fired up for the last couple weeks, months, because I thought today would be the perfect time for Joey Votto, debut at the Rogers Center. He got the Reds in town, but unfortunately, he's missing his moment. Has kind of passed him by in a sense when you look at his numbers. So we will talk Blue Jays. We will tee up tonight's Reds and Blue Jays series that's starting at the Rogers Center. But they will not be a Joey Votto in the lineup. What can you do?
Yeah.
Play better.
Obviously, you thought when this whole thing happened, when they signed him and he was out there sort of, I don't want to say withering on the vine. That seems very, very rude. But nobody else wanted to sign him, and then they signed him, and the Blue Jays did, and you thought that it would all make sense for a September call-up, and obviously when, you know, it's not quite September yet. Thankfully, we still got a little bit of summer to go.
Felt like September.
But you would think, you would at least hope that he would be performing a little bit better so he wouldn't be taking away at-bats from the younger players who I think at this current juncture for the Toronto Blue Jays, it would be more beneficial to have the younger players getting at-bats rather than have a Joey Votto who's His numbers are not great at the moment coming up and taking
Even if he was hitting like a league average right now in the minors and hadn't had the injury concerns, it would have been a perfect night to
have. Cool story.
It would have been a great story.
Yeah.
Like whether you think Joey Votto loves Canada or not, whatever. This is a big moment. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's going to have hopefully one day have an opportunity to wear a Blue Jays jersey. And tonight would have been perfect, but
maybe it'll still happen.
The script writers didn't account for poor numbers at AAA. And then the biggest thing is, and we're going to continue on the French theme here, big time trade a little earlier in the day. Patrick Laine. That's not the French I meant. To the Montreal Canadiens. Patrick Laine and a 2026 second round pick to Montreal for defenseman Jordan Harris. No salary retention. So it's $8.7 million for the next two seasons. I think first thing I thought of was that opening night. It's Leafs Habs. It's Matthews Laine now. It's that rivalry is going to be ignited even more. And obviously, he's been around a little bit. He's tried his fortunes with different organizations, and maybe this is the stability and the stepping stone that he needs. So we're going to talk to Renaud Lavoie from TVA Sports in a moment here. So quick flush.
Yeah, I hope for Patrick Laine's sake and for the Montreal Canadiens' sake that they can extract the most out of him, because I still think back to the draft lottery interview that he did with Darren Millard when he was like lying in bed on the FaceTime. And I just thought at that moment, I was like, this guy is an interesting character for the National Hockey League. And obviously coming into the league, he was an incredible goal scorer. If he can get back to just a semblance of what that was, if he can stay healthy, it's going to be great for the Montreal Canadiens.
Okay. An August trade to kick off our topics today. Let's bring in Renaud. Appreciate you jumping on. Bonjour. How are you?
Bonjour. I'm pretty good. Thanks for having me, guys.
I'm going to let Jesse speak French. He just came back from Paris, so you guys can go at it, and I'll use Google Translate.
All I have is bonjour, but Renaud, I'll ask you about Patrick Laine for the Montreal Canadiens. Yeah. So how long had this been on the table for the Habs? How long were they looking at acquiring Laine? Obviously, we know that he wanted out of Columbus, but was this always something that was in the cards for Montreal?
Well, the first time I had discussions regarding Patrick Laine, as a possibility with the Montreal Canadiens, it was around July 1st. So it's been a while. It's been like easily 6 weeks now. And even if it was denied a few times, at the end of the day, rumors were still there. I think what was really important for the Canadiens management, it was to not only get Patrick Laine, but at the same time to have a draft pick in return. Pretty sure that they were hoping to have a first round pick, but a second round pick is not bad, considering that Patrick Laine was playing for the Blue Jackets. And at the same time, it's been a while since the Canadiens wanted to trade Jordan Harris. As I remember, it was at least since the trading deadline, so before that a little bit, that he was part of some trading rumors around the NHL. Not because Jordan is a bad defenseman, not at all. It's really because they have too much left-handed D. A lot of them, still really, really young coming in. So obviously they wanted to make room for the younger defenseman coming in, and Jordan Harris, even if he was playing on the right side, playing well, by the way, on the right side, I think it was crystal clear that the writing was on the wall. And now he's with the Blue Jackets. So I'll say that these discussions probably, are part of the rumors here in Montreal since, the UFA market opened, and probably the discussions started earlier than that.
So we know that we've seen three teams. Well, this will be the third team for Patrick Laine, obviously starting with the Winnipeg Jets and going to the Columbus Blue Jackets, and now with the Montreal Canadiens. And I don't think they've always been the most comfortable situations for him. He's spoken about that himself. And I wonder for you, when you look at putting Patrick Laine in the Montreal market with this young team with an opportunity to play, top 6 minutes and really contribute, what makes Montreal a good fit for Patrick Laine, the player?
Well, you know what? He's going to play with a really good young brass. And I think he's going to have technically not a role like, a senior player in this league. But, he's been through a lot. And I'm pretty sure that because of his experience, he's going to be able to help the younger players. I'm convinced that Patrick Laine, when he saw the way Austin Matthews played, he put a lot of pressure on himself to be, and he told us before the draft, in his mind, he was better than Austin Matthews. So he put a lot of pressure on himself. Okay. Probably that today, 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, he probably knows that that was probably something that was not smart to do. And you better, start to be a good walker before being a good runner in this league. And I think that because of that, mentally, probably it was a little tough for him. So he's going to help the Cole Caulfield of this world, the Nick Suzuki of the Montreal Canadiens, the Juraj Slafkovský, who's going to play his third season in the NHL with a lot more expectations now, with a contract that's going to start not this season, but next season. So I think he's going to be able to help the younger players. But the expectations are crystal clear. If he can score, let's say, 30 goals or 40 goals for the Montreal Canadiens, everyone's going to look at this rate and say, wow, that was what a steal by the organization. But, there's still a lot of hockey to be played between now and his 40th goal. So we'll see how things are going to turn out. And at the end of the day, if it's not working out, he's got what? It's only a 2-year deal left for him. So, I see it more right now as a win-win situation for the Montreal Canadiens.
Is it kind of reminiscent of the Sean Monahan situation with the Habs, where they brought him in, you sort of reestablish him as a legitimate NHL hockey player and then able to flip him a little bit later on? I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, because if Patrick Laine goes out and scores 40 goals, then the Habs, knowing they have salary cap room, maybe they bring him back. But is it that sort of situation where it's very low risk because it's short term and the potential upside for Laine is huge?
Yeah, and I think the biggest difference here is the health of Patrick Laine compared to Sean Monahan, right? Because Sean is such a great player. Let's be honest here. It's really, really sad what happened to him because of all his hip surgeries and groin issues. And because, you know, Sean Monahan is, I'm going to repeat myself, but he's a really, really good hockey player and still is. But for how long? That's the question that everyone is asking. Now with Patrick Laine, you have a player that's healthy, younger, and he has a lot to prove, not only to himself, but to the rest of the NHL. So we'll see how things are going to turn out. But yes, in a way, let's say this season he's not producing at the level that he wants to. Well, what's going to happen next summer? And probably he's going to be traded the year after. So we'll see how things are going to evolve. But right now, when you look at the Montreal Canadiens, one thing for sure, this is a better team than it was maybe 24 hours ago. They're knocking on that door. That's the goal. The goal is, are they going to say the goal is to make the playoffs? I don't believe anyone's going to say that at the golf tournament in 3 weeks. But what I am hoping is that, you know, they're going to say we're going to battle for it and we're going to knock on that door.
Yeah, I guess perfectly leading into my next question is, like, how much can we evaluate this giving them, like, wins, like, in baseball, like, your war? Yeah. So, I mean, looking up last year's standings, you know, dead last in the Atlantic, obviously we know that with a pretty bad goal differential. But the Senators were within grasp. The Sabres were within grasp. Is it maybe just starting to jump over those teams? And maybe it's not to make the playoffs next year, but it could be to be higher than the bottom feeders and to be competitive and to give some of these young guys some opportunities to continue to, like, sink their teeth in. Would you say that that's an attainable goal now with Patrick Laine?
Well, the problem is that the division is so hard. And if you look at the last two seasons, the Montreal Canadiens really struggle against teams in his own division. I don't remember the last time they won a game versus the Ottawa Senators. I think it's 9 or 10 losses in a row now against the Ottawa Senators, who are not that good technically. Mm-hmm. But that being said, and that's going to be the challenge for this franchise, because as much as you know, you're a better team today, if you can't win against the Toronto Maple Leafs, the Ottawa Senators, the Florida Panthers, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Detroit Red Wings, you're going to struggle. And it's really, really sad, but that's the reality of this franchise. They need to beat teams in his own division. That will be the goal this season. If not, you and I can talk about, you know, how successful this team needs to be until they're not able to win versus really good teams. Well, they're not going to make the playoffs. That's obvious. So we'll see how things are going to evolve. If you look at you know, the Metropolitan Division, there's a lot of question marks too. What are the Capitals? What are the Penguins? You know, but that being said, even if, you know, the way the standing is, you can be in the playoffs even if you're not a good team in your division. I believe that, you know, the biggest challenge for this franchise will be to beat, you know, all the Toronto Maple Leafs of this world.
The Habs fan base is one of the great fan bases in all of sports.
And
you're the perfect person to ask this. Because you have your finger on the pulse of the fan base, what is the level of patience that the fan base has with this rebuild? Because it has been a number of seasons so far. And while there has been progress, I think it's probably been a little bit slower than most people thought it was going to be. They'd be hoping that Patrick Laine helps move things along a little bit more than they've had to this point. But what does the fan base think about the way that management has been handling this rebuild to this point?
What's really interesting is when Jeff Gordon arrived, when Kent Hughes arrived, Martin St-Louis arrived, they all said the same thing. Okay, they talked about what was the goal. And the goal is not to make the playoffs. The goal is to have a team that's going to battle for a long time for the Stanley Cup. A little bit like, the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they look at the Tampa Bay Lightning as a really good example of what they want to be. And that's what they're chasing right now. So if you talk, and I had a really good discussion with Jeff Molson, the owner of the Montreal Canadiens, in April. And I asked him, are you surprised by the fact that the fans seems to really understand the process and are really patient? And he said, yes, I am surprised. But in the same interview, he said, well, patience is one thing, but I know that myself, Jeff Molson, and the fans, at one point, we want to win games. And we need to go and be a team that's going to be tough to play against. And that's, I believe, what the fans understand too. And in a way, management, when they probably heard what Jeff Molson said, they publicly, not only to them, but publicly, they realized that, hey, we need to we need to make sure that we're not going to finish 28 again. And I thought at one point that the Canes at last training camp, when you had a Kirby Doc, with the way he was playing at the training camp, I was like, okay, maybe they're going to finish 21st, 22nd, mm-hmm. when you look at the general standing. And it didn't happen because, again, of some injuries, and especially Kirby Doc. But now you need to make sure that you'll be a team that's going to compete for a playoff spot.
Just on the other side of the trade, Jordan Harris going to Columbus. I know you mentioned, like, I think it's a win-win. I think you said that as well. But they're trading from a position of surplus. You have a lot of young defensemen on the left-handed side as well, a good young one going to Columbus. Were you surprised that that was the trade package, that that's all it took, and maybe some of the bigger names weren't touched in the Patrick Laine deal?
Well, we talked to Kent Hughes an hour ago. And one thing he mentioned, because we talk about, since how long they were talking with the Blue Jackets for Patrick Laine. And one thing he mentioned is, if you look at the cap and if you look at different teams, there's not a lot of teams that can handle a $8.7 million contract for the next two seasons. And that's why the Montreal Canadiens were really part of that discussion. But that at the same time, the Blue Jackets had no leverage. I think Patrick Laine, with his no trade clause, and Montreal was not on his no trade list. But at the same time, they realized that the Blue Jackets realized that Patrick wanted to play elsewhere. Probably realized that were probably three teams that were ready to accept the contract like Patrick Laine's contract. So they didn't have any leverage, to be honest. But for the Montreal Canadiens, I believe it was really important for them to get a high draft pick too in return.
Renaud, thanks so much for doing this today. Thanks for taking the time in the middle of the dog days of the summer to talk some hockey. And I got to say, merci, au revoir, as I'm getting better with my French.
Take care, guys.
Thanks,
Renaud.
Thank you.
Très bien?
Really? I know that one. I think this is a low-risk move for the Montreal Canadiens. And I know, there's going to be fans all across the country that don't like me saying this, but I enjoy when the Habs are good because I think having an original six team, one of the great franchises in all of sports, and to have them sort of languishing, coming off that Stanley Cup final run, it just hasn't been pretty for them. And what you're waiting for is to see some of their guys take that next step. And maybe they needed a little bit more of a supporting cast around the Suzukis and the Caulfield and the Slavkovskis in order to take that next step. So when you evaluate, and you, it was a great job of you pointing it out, when you have a surplus on D and you're able to turn that into a guy who, he has some baggage. He obviously, his numbers are not what they were. He only played 18 games last year, had 9 points. So you're going to need to find a way to turn Patrick Laine around, but obviously the raw talent is there. Mm-hmm. And if you can harness like 75% of what Patrick Laine used to be, then it could go a long way in helping you get back to the postseason. And I know that Renaud said that the postseason is not necessarily the goal. It's to be a consistent Stanley Cup contender, but it's not going to happen overnight. Like you're not going to go from 28th to first. You're going to go 28th to 16th to 5th to first, most likely. Mm-hmm. So it's a step in the right direction, I think, for the Habs, and I'm excited to see where it takes them. I'm excited to see Leafs and Habs.
There you go.
Opening night.
Opening night. I think it is, like the way you put it, with low risk. Montreal was one of the only teams with the cap situation to be able to bring on, what is it, 8.2?
A lot of money.
It's a lot of money, and it's 2 years of it, and they don't have to give up so many prospects and young talent to make this happen. And maybe it is the change of scenery that he's looking for, and maybe it's it's a tough market. We know that. We know this fan base is hungry, but they're not hungry to win the Stanley Cup this year. They're hungry to build towards the Stanley Cup in mm-hmm. the next X amount of years. They've got a really great young forward core. You said Slafkowski, Suzuki, Caulfield, Laine, Newhook, Kirby Dach. Like, that's a pretty great top six. So it's not that, you know, he needs to come in and be the all-star. He needs to be a top six contributor. He needs to be better than he's been in the last couple of years. And, 8.7 by 2 is expensive, but not many teams could make it happen, and Montreal had the assets. So, we'll see. I'm excited to see the Habs-Leafs rivalry. I mean, obviously, that's something that we experienced living in Toronto. And I like when other teams that are your rivals are good. That's why the Sens and the Leafs had those years that were so good. And even the Sabres, when you go down to Buffalo, like, you want that game. I mean, they usually win.
Those are the best games.
But you want that to be against a team that's, like, just as good or better. So it'll be fun to see Matthews and Laine go head-to-head. I'm sure every night that we have that game will be just, like, points betting against each other because they want to show up.
Well, let me ask you that. Is this a thing again? Like, are we going to have – we're not obviously debating who's the better hockey player at this point. But
at one point we were, and that's crazy.
Yeah, at one point we were. And the question is, like, are we now going to have the features again that sort of pit Matthews and Laine against each other? Obviously, they're nowhere mm-hmm. in the same stratosphere anymore. But does this bring back, like, some of those
conversations? You know what it brings back?
Conversations?
The tweets on Twitter that people had sent when they were drafted and how Laine felt about, like, even what Reno said, like, I thought I was better than Matthews. Well, now he's been giving himself a great opportunity to be in the market right beside and just as loud at times as the guy that you're talking about. Columbus, there was really never a connection against, you know, Leafs in Columbus. Well, there was at one point. And then when you talk about Winnipeg, like, playing in a Canadian market, that gives you that expertise or that availability to be in the media. But now he's in Montreal, so he can't escape the comparison, and that should hopefully fuel you. I mean, Matthews needs no fuel. Like, he's got a captaincy. He's coming off an amazing, amazing, amazing season. He keeps putting stuff in his trophy cabinet. So, if anything, it's for Laine to raise his level to say, I'm there.
Yeah. You made another great point about the media. And, you know, Laine...
just full of good points tonight.
Laine has obviously been exposed, like you said, mm-hmm. to the Canadian media in the Winnipeg market. I'm not quite sure that Winnipeg is the same pressure cooker that is the Montreal Canadiens, and he's going to be going from playing in, let's face it, a hockey outpost of sorts in Columbus for 3 seasons, like, right back into that pressure mm-hmm. cooker. And you would think on the surface, like, maybe that's a tough spot for a guy to be who's struggled the last couple of years, but his best years were with Winnipeg. They were in that mm-hmm. pressure cooker. So while it might seem like that's not the right place for him, maybe he's a guy that actually needs that to motivate him and to rise to the occasion. And, I mean, luckily for him, he's going to a situation where he's got some other really good young players. And, man, I hope it works out for him, because he is and was at one point one of the more exciting goal scorers mm-hmm. in the National Hockey League. And just to have the rivalry back and have him be a part of it would be so much fun.
All right, keep circling your calendars. It's got Leafs and Canadiens opening night. I believe that is October
9th. Not that far away. Life comes at you fast.
It's coming quick. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to chat with Chris Rose, who helped give us some more content today.
Amazing.
A great chat with Chris Bassett. It's all over the internet. We'll go through some of these quotes. We'll talk about the NFL season as well. And we'll end with teeing up tonight's game without Joey Votto, but a return of a former Blue Jay, which... Santiago Espinal makes his return to the Rogers Center. Of course, he's going to hit home run. So we'll give you some best bets.
Standing ovation?
Yeah, he was pretty loved, you know?
Ovation.
He had some ups and downs.
Ovation.
He'll get an applause.
Yeah, so, good job by you.
So that's a little later tonight on Sportsnet, 7 o'clock across Sportsnet, Sportsnet Radio Network. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back on the Fan Pregame. All right, welcome back to the Fan Pregame, Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet 590. The Fan a little later on. Blue Jays baseball returns to the Rogers Center. The Reds are in town for a couple days here to face the Blue Jays. It was supposed to be the thing that I predicted months ago, and I was all, like, confident about. Tonight will be Joey Votto's debut as a Toronto Blue Jay, and I was parading around Sportsnet saying I said it first, and then Joey Votto was hitting, you know, 154 in double A and made me look like a fool. But it would have been a great, great story tonight. You know, obviously he's going to be one of maybe the best Canadians to ever play the game, going to Cooperstown. And there might be an opportunity for him still to be wearing a Blue Jays uniform in a photo that gets there. But right now it's a lot of Bisons and a lot of necessary growth to be recalled or called up to the big league team, which is crazy to say for someone with a career like that. But I think a lot of people are torn on this. Our text line's always open at 590-590. Standard data rates do apply for sending us a message or tweet us. Would you have wanted to see Joey Votto tonight in the Blue Jays uniform? I guess there's an argument to be made that doesn't matter. They're not going to win any games. They're not going to get any closer to the playoffs.
But that's true.
The other side of that is maybe there's a young kid that needs an at-bat. Joey Votto takes it from them. And then there's the argument that maybe Joey Votto is just going to embarrass himself and he's not ready for Major League Baseball. And then how sad would that be if he goes 0-for-4 and strikes out and it's not the glamorous home run hitter moment that he had in spring training? What do you think, Jesse?
Well, I think you're right that it would have been sort of a full circle moment for him tonight to play against his former team. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, in this current situation and current climate with the Toronto Blue Jays, the younger players take precedence. The only real reason that Joey Votto would be up with the big club right now would be because you're doing him a solid, basically. Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's it.
That's it.
It's to appease your fan base.
Yeah.
You sell some jerseys and you make Joey Votto happy and maybe a lot of fans will love Joey Votto.
Yeah, and it's nice. And in a season that has not gone great for anybody and the fans haven't had a ton to cheer about outside of Vladimir Guerrero Jr., it would be a nice little story. But I would then ask the fans, what's more important long-term? Is it a nice moment where you get to cheer on Joey Votto in a Blue Jays uniform? Or is it trying to figure out which guys that you either acquired in trade or had with the Bisons originally that are now getting opportunities, is it more important for those guys to get the reps and you figure out who's going to be around in 2025 when it appears everybody in the organization thinks you're going to suddenly somehow compete for a World Series championship again? Like, you got to figure out who's going to be on the team next year. That's most important.
All right, we'll circle back on the Joey Votto opportunity that has passed him by, at least tonight. But let's bring in Chris Rose, the Chris Rose Rotation NFL Network, who has provided us with so much content today. We are so grateful for your interview with Chris Bassett because it is definitely making the rounds. How's it going, Chris?
Doing great. Yeah, it's not this Chris that's made headlines. It's another Chris.
So
we're both from Ohio. So
there you go.
We're both Browns fans.
Okay.
So I guess we have a little bit in common.
Mm-hmm. What did you make? Let's just zoom out. And obviously there's a lot of quotes circulating and obviously people can watch the entire interview and listen to it and get their own perspective. But we've now heard Chris Bassett's side through Arden's Welling of Sportsnet, which, you know, he has a couple quotes backtracking. But, like, what was your perspective of his view on the Blue Jays when you spoke to him about this season and everything that has transpired?
I don't think he has to backtrack at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, what did he say in that clip that we put out that was hurtful or embarrassing? He said, I want to protect the guys in here. He goes, there are some problems in the organization. I mean, that's not breaking news, right? I mean, there's something that has gone terribly wrong here. I've said this before on your shows that I had the Blue Jays representing the American League in the World Series. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a moron when it comes to that stuff. I'm not very good at predicting things. I've think I've gotten one out of the last 13.
Most
right.
people so suck
I
at
really
it.
Nailed,
yeah.
But I nailed that one. I finally got Washington in 2019. The other stuff, like, that's why I asked him. I said, how do you explain this to Blue Jays fans? And for him, I thought he was really honest. Mm-hmm. Like, we did not pivot after offering Shohei whatever it was. And he decided to go up the 5 freeway and become a Dodger. And if you look at the team, they didn't. They did not pivot. If they were really willing, I don't know if it was $700 million, but let's just play this game. Let's say they were offering $620 to Shohei or whatever number you want to say. That meant that they had some money to play with and go get somebody, and they really didn't. And, you know, I don't think that's lost on that clubhouse.
Isn't this sort of thing exactly what we want in sports? Like, obviously, it's great that he said it on your show, but he is someone who, even after his starts, is very honest. He's very honest with the fans, and it's, for me, incredibly refreshing. And the fact that he said what he said, like, that is what Ailish and myself and basically everybody on this network
everyone
and across the country,
in, everybody that listens,
everyone's saying the same thing. So it's not like he said anything that is so outlandish or outrageous, which makes it a little bit more surprising that he would sort of walk or clarify some of the comments that he made. But like from a sports fan's perspective, isn't this exactly what you want?
Yes. You know, this is who's upset with him is what I want to know. Like if the organization is upset with him,
yeah.
which to me is ridiculous, then go have a meeting behind closed doors and hash it out. Mm-hmm. Like, they should ask his opinion. Like, Chris Bassett, now there's times he has admittedly not pitched well. There are times he's pitched very well. He himself said it in that clip. Like, the pitching staff's got to be better. We needed more offense around Vlad. And how about some of the guys who they have had there? Bo Bichette hasn't been a better than average major leaguer in over a year.
Mm-hmm.
This is not me being mean. This is me looking at the numbers. And anybody, like, that's not a shot at Bo Bichette, though. That is a fact. And if you are going to build your team around Vlad and Bo, and George Springer has not been very good this year, and Dalton Varsho has been okay, this is where they are. I mean, they are in last place in a highly competitive division. And just wishing that things will get better is not what's going to make things better in Toronto come 2025.
I think the most like illuminating thing and maybe the hardest to swallow was the accuracy about the Shohei Ohtani lack of pivot, you know, that Chris Bassett draws attention to, because we all felt that in the media and we, whoa, so what are we doing now? And not to say that he goes back and clarifies that Justin Turner isn't a bad player and neither is IKF. But it's a little bit different than Shohei Ohtani. Anybody is different than Shohei Ohtani. When that happened and the Blue Jays, you know, failed to provide another superstar, was that kind of the writing on the wall going into the season? And maybe we were just all caught up in the excitement of it to realize that that's a pretty big fall to make from Shohei to and anybody. Like, no offense mm-hmm. to anybody.
No, but let's take the San Francisco Giants, for instance, right? They wanted Shohei. They did not get him. And for years, Farhan Zaidi out there in San Francisco has caught heat because he's never been able to land that big fish, whether it was Aaron Judge, Carlos Correa because of the ankle. Bryce Harper on a short contract offer. Don't know what that was about. But he hasn't been able to do that. He did make a pivot. He went and got guys that were searching for nine-figure deals and had to settle for substantially less money, right? Whether it was Matt Chapman or Jorge Soler, he wasn't going to get a nine-figure deal, but you understand what I'm getting at. Blake Snell, obviously. Now, we don't know if it's going to work out for the Giants. They're in wild-card contention, but they're certainly not the disaster that the Toronto Blue Jays have been this year. So they did have a game plan. Whether it fell into their lap or not, you could make that argument. I'll listen to that all day. But there is something else. You need to have something else. And I will say this. I have been friendly with Mark Shapiro for a long time. As you can see, I'm a Cleveland Guardians guy. I believe in him as an executive and a person. And I know that that probably isn't a popular stance. I think maybe getting called to the mat by one of your own players is something that can wake up the organization.
Mm.
And I don't think people should see this as they should look at this not as a divisive issue, but rather a, hey, let's all get on the same damn page and make sure we're all pulling in the same direction and that we do have a plan. Because you don't want to be left here next August going, well, how do we get ready for 2026?
Yeah, I think it's an excellent point. And the thing that I keep coming back to is management has said in recent days that they think that they can be competitive in 2025 and actually compete for a World Series. If you look at this roster right now, the only reason that they would be able to compete is Vladimir Guerrero Jr., who, you know, his contract's coming due at the end of next season, so they're going to have to figure out a way to sign him. That's going to be expensive if they do, in fact, bring him back. But is the silver lining that ownership was at one point willing to give Shohei Ohtani $700 million? So if they do come up with a plan, they can not only re-sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr., but they can also go out and get other free agents that can make this thing a relatively quick turnaround. Now, obviously, you need to nail the players that you bring in, but is it at least a little bit of silver lining? And maybe it was a shot from Bassett to say, hey, you didn't use the money last offseason, but come this offseason, use the money and use it properly.
Yeah, he said the reality is you need three superstars minimum in a lineup to really compete. Now, I think probably two is the better number, and then the third guy has got to be like a legit all-star, whether he's somebody who develops in your organization and is, you know, working through his arbitration years. It doesn't mean you have to go out and sign three superstars. Yeah. I think that's probably the way I interpreted his statement there. But he's right. Like, you can't just say, all right, we want to run it back. Like, we think that this team can compete. You can compete. Like, the Toronto Blue Jays have spent money, right? They gave nine figures to Kevin Gausman. They extended Berrios. They gave a nice paycheck to Chris Bassett. Kikuchi was making decent money for a guy who was expected to be a fourth starter. Like, that's all great. They have to repair that bullpen, and they have to figure out what to do offensively. And that means that maybe you're going to eat some money and get rid of some guys. I mean, you're not going to trade Bo Bichette right now. You're going to sell him at an all-time low.
Yeah.
You just can't do that right now. So he and I talked about what you do with Vlad Guerrero in the episode, and he had some opinions about it, where he is.
Yeah, the Vlad stuff was really important. I mean, everybody wants to praise Vlad that plays with him and talks about him in this market. Like, it's hard to put words on what he's been able to do since the All-Star break, and it feels like we're seeing, hopefully, the real Vlad. So let's talk about next steps for Vlad. Obviously, we mentioned it. He's got about a year and a bit here with the Blue Jays. Like, sign at any cost, just hand him the bag. What about the first base versus third base situation that you're seeing with Vladdy? Like, how would you approach it?
Well, like I said, we spent a lot of time talking about that. And Bassett talked about his positional versatility. Mm-hmm. He thinks that Vlad has much more than maybe the organization is giving him credit for. So I thought, from a guy who plays with him every day and is out in the center of the diamond every fifth day, who wants a guy over at third base that can catch the ball, I thought Chris's words about Vlad were kind of illuminating. So go give that a listen. Now, what I did say, I would have done one or two things at the trade deadline. I would have extended Vlad, or I would have traded him.
Mm.
And I would not have gone to this last year trying to figure it out. I just think that's a slippery slope. Like, the Boston Red Sox went down this, and obviously Vlad is not the player that Mookie Betts was, right? He was already a league MVP. He was already a world champion. But look at what they got back for Mookie Betts, for 1 year of Mookie Betts. Connor Wong has been a good catcher. Alex Verdugo was fine, and then they got a bunch of arms for him, and we'll see whether or not any of those guys work out. And then Jeter Downs didn't make it there. Like, is that what you want to do? You're not going to trade Vlad, I don't think, with 1 year left. I think they've mishandled this situation. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, well, it wouldn't be the first thing that I think the Toronto Blue Jays management has mishandled. But you are wearing a Cleveland Guardians hat, and before we let you go, we got to ask you about the Guardians. First of all, are they the most underrated team in all of baseball? Is Jose Ramirez the most underrated star in all of baseball, talking about third baseman? Because you look at this guy's numbers, it's like every year he's a perennial top five MVP candidate, probably going to be once again. But when are the Guardians ever going to get the love that they deserve? Maybe
when
never.
They win it all.
Yeah.
No, when they win it all. I always tell people, listen, I love my hometown. I was just there this weekend. I call the Browns preseason games on local TV there. I love Cleveland, but we have something called small market syndrome. Like, we always say, well, why don't people talk about us? And I say, well, when we win, they'll talk about us. When LeBron helped. When LeBron hoisted the trophy in 2016, they were forced to talk about us. Now, it helped that we had the best player in the game. But, like, don't be so small-minded. Just go win the games. Go win the games, and that's when. Now, as far as Jose Ramirez goes, I think the bigger question, because he's not underrated anymore. I mean, he just started the All-Star game again. People know exactly what he is, and he is a great baseball player in every facet of it. I think the interesting thing is going to be, is he a Hall of Famer? And I think his discussion is going to be fascinating. I think the fact that, Scott Rolen got in, it's going to help him immensely because Jose is going to blow past his offensive numbers. Rolen obviously was a wizard defensively, but Jose steals bases. He's got a 30-30 season going. It's going to get close to 40-40 if he doesn't get there. Like, he is a legit Hall of Fame, top of the ballot discussion guy eventually somewhere down the road.
I'm going to sneak in an NFL question since you opened the door. Obviously, the Browns, a big year ahead. I mean, people are talking about the Browns. So you called their preseason game the other day. I assume you can take this whichever way you'd like. What biggest NFL preseason storyline you're following, whether it's Browns related, maybe just like an AFC North related. What's got your mind?
I think that I am on the Caleb Williams train in Chicago, right, in part because I am significantly older than the two of you probably combined.
Don't think so.
So I have watched the Bears play football for 5 decades. Mm-hmm. And it's basically been the same MO. Monsters in the midway defense. Let's run the football and pray our quarterback doesn't blow it. Welcome to the 21st century Chicago Bears fans. Caleb Williams is fantastic. I think that outside of Patrick Mahomes, he is going to provide us with more wow moments of throwing the football. That doesn't mean he's going to be the second best quarterback. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I'm going to say he's going to give us all these amazing. We saw a couple this weekend against Cincinnati. Like, you're like, wow, this is ridiculous stuff. And we are going to see an offense in Chicago unlike we have ever seen before. And to me, if I'm a Bears fan, I cannot wait. That being said, I think they're the third best team in that division, but it's a really fascinating division.
Are the Browns in trouble if Nick Chubb starts the season out for the first 4 games? Because obviously he's coming back from just a horrendous, horrendous injury. But how damaging is it if he's not there for the first 4?
Yeah, it could be more than that. We do not know where he is. They've been very quiet about it. He did do an interview with us this weekend with Aditi Kinkabwala on the sidelines, and he said, I am getting 1% better every day. So that's good news. Like, I do feel like he is getting closer and closer. Their biggest problem is their offensive line. And in part because it is in conjunction with Deshaun Watson. You have to remember, he had pretty major shoulder surgery in the offseason. He has not played exceptionally well since the trade from Houston to Cleveland. Those are the two bigger issues than Nick Chubb, which is saying something because when Nick Chubb has been healthy, he's been the best running back in the league.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, we appreciate your time today. Should we send you a list of athletes what we want honest answers from, then you can interview them, and we can get some headlines going, or what?
Hey, I am not in the headlines business.
I know, but you do it so well, and I know you don't mean to.
I appreciate it. No. Here's the deal, and I'm sure I'll talk to Chris about this next time. Mm-hmm. We have not texted about it today. We are not a gotcha show. Mm-hmm. That is not it. But what we are is letting athletes say what they want without the fear of repercussions. There wasn't one thing he said in this interview where you were like, really, Chris? Mm-hmm. Like, that's some BS. Yeah. He protected his teammates. He said, I don't want to say exactly what's going on, but there are some problems here. And yeah, because if you're just going to sit here and say, well, I'm good with last place, and if we get to 73 wins, well, whatever, we'll just figure it out. We'll be in contention next year. That is not going to fix the issue. Mm-hmm. He wants to be a problem solver, not a problem creator. And he did not create one issue. If you go listen to that interview, there's no way he created any problems. And I'll scream that at the top of my lungs.
And I think we all are all in agreement. Yeah. You did a great job. So we can check it out.
The Chris Rose
rotation. And good luck with the rest of the season here. Hopefully we get a chance to chat soon, or at least some NFL down the road. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to come on it whenever. I mean, awesome. I'm sick of not talking negatively about the Blue Jays. Like, I did not want this. I wanted to get one right. I stink at this. Please. Everybody have a great day.
You as well.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. You can check out his work, that Chris Rose Rotation. Obviously, we talked a lot about it today. Had Chris Bassett on. And yeah, and I will say in agreement, I don't think really Chris Bassett said anything that was offside.
No,
he did speak to Arden Zwelling, and you can check on Arden's Twitter page about just pregame clarifying some of the comments, because it's easy for things to get aggregated. And so nice. There's some good clarifications to some of the comments he makes about things that the organization can do better. He talks about, the swing and miss for Shohei Ohtani that obviously is hard to fill that void. And he doesn't, he clarifies that it's not that, you know, they didn't get anybody good. It's just Shohei. He talks about some things that are out of their control. And a lot of that has to do with age. He goes, I'm going to be 36 next year. You can't change that. You can't change people being injured. You can't change Bo Bichette having two calf injuries or Jordan Romano coming off surgery. And so he gives some clarification. So go check out Arden's Twitter page as well. And obviously listen to the interview with Chris.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Rose is bang on when he says, you know, listen to any time Bassett holds court with the media after a start when it doesn't go well. I mean, he stands there for 10 minutes basically waxing about the exact same things that he talked about in this interview with Chris. And it's just that this is more of a longer form conversation. And like Chris Rose said, it wasn't a gotcha. It was just Bassett being honest about the situation and the gulf from Shohei Ohtani to anybody else that they were going to sign or did sign was massive. I remember in the immediate aftermath, it was like, oh, go out and get Cody Bellinger. But would Cody Bellinger have solved any of the problems for the Toronto Blue Jays this season? No. So they took a swing. They missed. It's not to say that everything worked out, because clearly it didn't. But it was going to be an uphill battle from the moment Shohei Ohtani decided to sign with the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's just the reality. And Chris Bassett pointing that out is not wrong in any way, shape, or form. In fact, we need more of that, and we need to have athletes who are refreshing in nature and honest with everybody, because it's not, there's nothing contradictory or confusing or anything. He didn't speak out of turn at all. He said exactly what the facts are, and the facts remain that the Blue Jays struggled in the offseason, and you're seeing that come to fruition during the regular season.
Straight facts.
That's it.
All right, so no Chris Bassett on the mound tonight. It'll be Kevin Gausman against a pitcher for the Reds making his major league debut. Aguiar is the 11th ranked prospect in Cincinnati's system. He was 5-4 with a 3.79 ERA and 22 starts at AAA, and was a 12th round draft pick in 2021. He's making his major league debut tonight. So he's either going to get absolutely, you know, blown up by Vladdy and everybody else, or he'll throw a no-hitter. So you pick your poison. So my parlay for tonight, and I know there's a lot of people going down to the Rogers Center to see the Reds. Obviously, Ellie De La Cruz is amazing to watch. You've got the opportunity to see some Joey Votto jerseys in the stands if you're a Reds fan. But Vladdy is Vladdy. So my parlay is an everyone has fun parlay. Both sides of the fan base has fun with this one. Vladdy home run and Ellie De La Cruz stolen base, plus 1050. I can totally see it happening. Vladdy's going up against a pitcher who's never pitched in the major leagues, and De La Cruz is just so much fun to watch. So everybody has fun with this parlay. And I'll just add an additional one, that Santiago Espinal, as I said, returns to Rogers Center tonight. For him to get a home run is plus 1050. Just himself.
That should be like
sprinkles.
This should be like plus 100.
Yeah.
Vladdy hits a home run every game, and De La Cruz is the fastest man alive.
So remember this.
I love it.
What are you doing?
Mine's way more boring and way more value-oriented.
Okay.
And a lot. It's the no fun.
Nothing's boring. It's okay.
But it's the Orioles and Mets. I'm taking the over 8.5 runs because it's not a great pitching matchup. Both offenses are very good.
There you go.
And when you watch the Orioles play, and frankly, when you watch the Mets play, when they don't struggle, which they tend to do from time to time, a lot of home runs,
okay.
A lot of runs in general. So give me that. But I might have to tag along on the.
I hope you do.
The fun parlay.
Everyone has fun.
I mean, putting Vladdy in any fun parlay works.
He was like himself plus 450 for a home run.
Yeah, he's
against a guy who's never pitched in the major leagues.
He's on another level. It's been so enjoyable to watch him over the last little while, because he was like struggling there for a bit.
Yep.
For a few months,
now
and
we
then
just gotta live in the joy
gear.
Of.
It's great.
A red hot Vlad. All right. Well, this was fun. Day one of the next 2 weeks of Jesse Rubinoff.
I love it.
You're back in the grind, eh?
Happy to be here.
We got a little fall colors going on today, too.
Yeah, I don't know what outfit I chose to have. It's not going to happen
like
again.
It's like a nice
It won't happen again for the next
orange.
2 weeks.
Pumpkin
spice. This is the
spice.
Last time you're going to see this.
Pumpkin spice Jesse will be back tomorrow. Have a great night, everyone. We'll see you then.